From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, ABC announced its fall season today, but the network's overlords at Disney stole the thunder. Then musician Lila Downs explores themes of migration and language in the United States and Mexico, and how she uses songs to bridge cultural divides.
That's what music has been to me, is an enormous tool that I can express these misunderstandings sometimes and hopefully bring people together. I really do believe that.
And we launch a new series that reunites artists with the teachers who help pave their creative path. All that coming up on The Frame. Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. The annual upfronts are taking place this week in New York City. It's when broadcast and cable networks gather to unveil their fall lineups and make their pitch to advertisers. Today, Disney announced its plans to buy Comcast's share of Hulu for no less than $5.8 billion, giving Disney full control of the streaming site. Bloomberg News reporter Lucas Shaw told me what Disney plans to do with its new acquisition.
All the executives who got asked today said it was too soon to know. One divide that we know is that Disney Plus is for all of the family-friendly and classic Disney programs. So Pixar and then also some Marvel and Star Wars. Hulu is going to be home to more of the adult shows, so like the FX network, which has had American Horror Story and People vs. OJ and Pose. Those shows are likely to live on Hulu. How exactly that's going to work, still being sorted out. Some of the other networks, what's the different shows on ABC or could end up in both places.
And also, Disney has ESPN Plus, which is going to be its sports streaming service. So Disney total will have, what, five streaming platforms in the next couple of years, or four at least by the end of this year?
It'll have the three big ones of Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus. And then there may be some smaller ones around the margin. But I think it's going to put almost all of its investment into those three. As John Landgraf, the head of FX, said this morning, there's not a whole lot of sense in being a smaller streaming service competing now that you have some of these huge companies, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Disney, AT&T, Comcast, all kind of racing towards the same place.
And John Landgraf also says he's letting FX Now go away, and instead the streaming for FX will now go on Hulu. So it does feel like there's a massive consolidation even between the Fox and Disney and ABC assets right now.
Yeah, and it's funny, we used to talk about, or in the entertainment business, there's a lot of talk about the six major studios, and that was mostly in reference to movies, but it's true in TV too. And that six has shifted where you still, because of the consolidation, Disney is still a really big player. Universal is through Comcast, which owns it, but you now have the tech guys seated at that table.
The other thing that also seems to be happening is that the networks are canceling a lot of shows, and obviously they're going to be introducing new ones. Does it feel as if there are higher profile shows that are now being axed?
The number of shows that really matter on broadcast has gone down. You look at what the ratings are, what the shows that people are talking about, and there's just not a lot of new broadcast hits every year. When you were talking, making reference to big shows getting canceled, one of the big shows that you think got canceled was Empire. Just 4 years ago, that was the big new hit on TV. Great news for Fox. It added viewers every week. Its season finale was watched by like 17, 18 million people. And just a few years later, the audience for that show has really shriveled. It's not even one of the 60 most watched shows on TV anymore. So it seemed to make sense for Fox to have that end after its sixth season. And the type of show that really catalyzes an audience every year, like Empire did a few years ago, is few and far between. You've had Empire, you've had This Is Us. Compare that to the number of sexy shows that have come out on streaming or on cable in recent years, and broadcast kind of share of pop culture just shrinks every year.
Disney has obviously been on a spending spree and buying a lot of the assets of 21st Century Fox, and now its Hulu deal. Are there other networks and media companies that feel like they're a little bit behind? Is there one network, in other words, that has more to prove at the upfront than others right now?
The companies that have a lot to prove are actually the smaller media companies that own cable networks. Most of the companies that own a big broadcast network, CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, are in a little stronger position because the audiences for those broadcast networks are still quite large, whereas the audiences for a lot of these smaller cable networks, the ones owned by Discovery, Viacom, AMC networks, are in a little more a little more of a challenge. But among the four broadcast networks, NBC and CBS are far ahead of their competition.
ABC announced that it is canceling an Oscar host for next year's award show.
The head of ABC said they were so pleased with how the show went this year. The ratings were up. And they announced that on the same day that they said that Jimmy Kimmel was sticking around for another 3 years. So it would have seemed like if you wanted to have him come back as Oscar host, you might put that announcement together. But frankly, as a viewer, as somebody who watches the Oscars, I thought it worked pretty well without a host.
We didn't talk specifically about NBC. It's part of Comcast, and NBC Universal is going to launch its own streaming service. How does it affect shows like The Office, which right now is available on Netflix, but might be going away? Is that the right impression?
Yeah, the fate of shows like The Office and Friends and some of the reruns that are quite popular on Netflix is up for debate right now. What you have is companies like Comcast and AT&T, whose studios own those shows, trying to decide what they want to do with them, because they're coming up with their own streaming services. You certainly want to have, if you're Comcast, you want to have The Office on the NBC Universal streaming service. If you're AT&T Warner Media, you want to be able to offer Friends on yours. But you get paid so much money by Netflix for those reruns, and you get to expose that show to a bunch of those viewers. Netflix has the largest audience of any streaming service. So what they may do is take kind of almost like a timeshare approach, where it'll exist on both. And it's not so different. You know, Friends is on Netflix now, but reruns are also available on traditional TV on different cable networks. And so you could see media companies do that, or they may choose to remove the show altogether. They haven't announced plans for either of those programs yet.
Lucas Shaw is covering the upfronts in New York. He joined us from the newsroom at Bloomberg. Lucas, thanks for taking time out.
Thanks, John.
And before we take a short break, let's note today the passing of comic actor Tim Conway. He was a beloved performer whose death has colleagues and fans recalling his hilarious gifts. Any actor hates getting the giggles on stage, but Conway loved to make his co-stars break character. So look for the Mr. Wiggins video on YouTube, where Conway gets the best of Harvey Korman on The Carol Burnett Show. Tim Conway died today in Los Angeles at the age of 85. Coming up, singer Lila Downs breaks down borders on her new album. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. The chili pepper is a fruit. Yes, like the tomato, it's not a vegetable. That can bring heat and suffering, but used right, though, it's full of joy and flavor. Singer Lila Downs had that in mind when making her latest album, Al Chile. For 25 years, Downs has told stories about migration, feminism, and indigenous rights in both the United States and Mexico. In other words, she is not afraid to get political. I asked Downs about the meaning behind her album's title, Al Chile.
Basically, it means give it to me like it is. And it's curious because when men use the phrase, it's really macho. But when women use it, it's like, you know, very funny. So it's one of those unusual phrases that comes, of course, stems from the way our culture goes. But at the same time, it's about the senses. And this album is very much about the senses.
I want to ask you a little bit about when you started working on this record, what was going on in the world, and how those events started shaping the kinds of songs that you were going to record.
Migration has been an issue for me all my life. Of course, I have been very privileged because I grew up back and forth. My father was a university professor. My mother, indigenous, Mixtec woman. And so it was kind of confusing because I remember there was always like not very good communication, of course, because of language, but also cultural misunderstandings. And so I think that's what music has been to me, is an enormous tool that I can express these misunderstandings sometimes and hopefully bring people together. I really do believe that. I think that Clandestino is a piece that we did on this album that points at migration and of course, makes us think of our history, human history, and the way we move around over the different continents.
I want to ask you about that song. It's a song that Manu Chao did in 1998. So 21 years later, you have re-recorded it and you've added some new lyrics. So let's listen to a little bit of your version of Clandestino. There's a line which means, if we don't fight for the children, what will become of us? And that seems to be very important, not just in this song, but in this whole album. Tell me about that lyric and why it means so much to you.
It is, yeah. Well, I was invited by Joan Baez, actually, to be part of the Lantern Tour a while back. What we did was they invited me to come along with some singer-songwriters. Steve Earle was one of the people spearheading this project. And one of the things that we did was support the detention centers by doing these concerts. And I became aware of all these videos that are circulating on the web about the children at the detention centers, and really alarmed by what was going on and I understand is still going on today. So I think we don't want to look at it in some ways, and it's very painful.
Well, that brings up kind of a bigger question about the way that a song, a movie, a book can look at an issue like that. You say we don't want to look at it, and yet we must to understand it. So how much of what you're trying to do is to say you need to pay attention to this thing that you might be ignoring, and not only that, you need to figure out how you are going to react to it and what you're going to do about it?
Well, I think that's the secret of art, right? And some of us might do a song that really turns heads, and then at times it just kind of exists and doesn't make much of a wave or a ripple, as the Grateful Dead would say. But I think it's important for me in my life to mention certain things. And if I find a beautiful song where I can express these thoughts, of course, I'm very happy to sing it and perform it. And if I can't find a song that I feel is speaking in the moment, I usually write a song about it. And that's what happened with Al Chile.
I want to ask you about a sound that is heard a lot in this record that I think was inspired by Sonideros, which is a mobile sound system that is used by DJs. What is that about, and what are you trying to capture from Sonideros in this record?
Yeah, well, that really would be a question for Camilo Lara. We invited
him. Who is
one
of your producers?
Yeah, he's the producer on this album. He's someone I've known for like 20-some years. I said to him, I would love to do an album with banda, but I want to figure out a way for it to become, you know, accessible and danceable. Cuando me muera, como te agradecería que pusieras en mi tumba dos botellas de mezcal. I wanted slightly a different version this time around, you know, going to the actual village and recording people on site. And that was really exciting for me because I love that kind of natural sound that bands have. And then, of course, Camilo, you know, did the post-production in studio and did a lot of effects and these kinds of things.
We're talking with Lila Downs about her new record, Al Chile. I want to play another song from your album. It's called Caminos de mi Vida, or I guess Paths of My Life. And it's a song that you do with your mom, who sings in the Mixtec language. Tell me about the song and about your collaboration with your mom.
Well, this is an amazing song. I think there are, you know, few songs in your life that you say, this is one of the songs, right? And the lyric also is very specific to Mother. One of the lyrics says, I didn't know that life would be this way. I'm surprised. It's very different from what I envisioned it to be when my mother took care of me and I was a child. And that's basically the lyric. And then another part of the lyric says, I hope one day to pay back the favor of being raised by my parents or by my mother mainly. So it's a Mother's Day song, really. And I asked my mother to translate it in Mixtec. And so we worked on it together, and she was very emotional about it. She was like, wow, you know, this lyric really made me cry. But cry about, you know, just the miracle of life.
And it's not just that this song is in Mixtec. There are different languages throughout the album.
Yeah, that's kind of been a question for me throughout my career. I've tried to, educate people through music. I hope not to be too preachy, but I hope that people in the U.S. especially learn that indigenous languages are alive today and well, and being spoken by a lot of people who work here in the kitchens and the farms, and have a heritage that is quite beautiful poetically.
For a lot of people, language can be a barrier. And certainly there's been a lot of conversation in this country about barriers between the United States and Mexico, particularly in the form of a wall. When you think about the role that art can play, music can play in challenging those constructs and those barriers, where do you see your work fitting in, and how can music take down those things that divide us?
I really do think that art makes much more of a difference than we think it can. I have seen in my own life that I was very confused and very angry, and I saw a big difference between us because I have felt discriminated. Mainly in Mexico, curiously. And so
Based on what?
You know, based on my indigenous root on the one side, and on the other, because I'm a Yankee. I'm a gringa.
So you lose both ways.
I lose
you're
both ways.
You're not Mexican enough and you're not American.
That's right.
Enough.
Okay. Yeah. So I was bitter about that, but music has really made things come together for me, and I'm so grateful for this enormous gift.
Lila Downs' new album is called Al Chile. Lila, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Son Chile. Un saludo a toda la costa chica.
Lila Downs' album Al Chile is available on streaming services. Coming up, KPCC arts education reporter Carla Javier joins me to launch her new project. It's a series that reunites artists with the teachers who influence them.
Yo tengo ganas de comer taco de chile con cerveza, con su sal y su cebolla asadito en el carbón.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. We're trying something new here on our show, and that is we're reuniting people who are working in the arts and entertainment with the teachers and mentors who changed their lives. KPCC's very own arts education reporter, Carla Javier, is bringing us those stories, and she's here with me now. Hey, Carla.
Hi there.
So how did this series come about?
Well, the arts are obviously a really big part of life here in Southern California, and learning about art is actually written into the state education code here. But unfortunately, despite those things, not everyone gets to learn about the arts. Like, for example, in LA County here, lower-income students and students of color have less access to arts in their schools. So I wanted to find practicing artists today for whom learning about art really made a big difference in their life personally and professionally. And I wanted to reunite them with the teachers who really made made that difference, made that happen.
So whose story do you have for us today?
Okay, first up is Sanjay Patel. He's this accomplished animator and illustrator. A short film he directed while he was at Pixar called Sanjay Super Team was nominated for an Oscar in 2016. But before all of that, back in the late 80s and early 90s, he was this quiet kid at San Bernardino High, and Julie Tabler was his art teacher. We reunited the two of them here at KPCC. Here's what they said.
You know how poor our high school was? Other high schools had, you know, they had money to put into their program. But you, I didn't want you guys to know that we didn't have all the best of the best, you know, to create. So we did the creation on cardboard that we pulled out of the dumpster.
I remember that.
And we had chalks, but they were the, you know, poorest of chalks that we did.
I remember not liking the chalk.
Yeah, it was all over the room. So whenever there was money to be made for you guys, we did it.
Versus like, shade this box and do this still life. It was win awards, win scholarships, so you can keep getting better and better education.
My concern was to be serious about it, that these were kids that's all you had.
I had never gotten that much money. And that it afforded me to finally buy a drafting table. It was like the only thing I wanted. That thing cost me like, I don't know, $100 or something, the rest of the money I gave to my parents, but it afforded me like a tool that a professional would use. Mm-hmm. All right, so outside of the classroom, I have to tell you, there were so many things that, you know, we got to share together that were so impactful to me. So the first time I visited CalArts, which was felt like going to Oz.
Really? That was an excursion.
That was an excursion, which was, you know, maybe 2 hours away, but for me it was a world away. Parents couldn't drive me there, but you could. And so for 4 years it was like we're winning competitions, everything was going great. I applied to CalArts, and then disaster struck. So I'd gotten in, but I couldn't afford it. I was depressed, I was wallowing in sadness or whatever. You pulled me out of it, you showed me another option. You were like, okay, you're gonna do some local murals to like earn some money for that summer. So I was doing that. And for whatever reason, I remember you calling me because there was an art school from Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
That you're like, Sanjay, you should come in and show them your work. And I'm like, I don't wanna go to Cleveland, Ohio.
Right.
To go to Cleveland Institute of the Arts.
That was a bad move.
And I showed them my work, and they liked it, and they gave me a full scholarship.
Blown away.
You didn't give up on me.
I worried about you every day. It was freezing there. I worried all day if you're going to be all right, if you're warm.
My mom is mentally ill, so she never was able to play that nurturing mother role. And, you know, I've just got so lucky so many times in my life to have so many great art teachers, but I think you really did more than any other teacher that to also, like, make sure that I had clothes on my back. You sent me care packages. I remember vividly getting hot chocolate. I remember vividly getting jackets from your own son. Like, this is something my mom could never do for me.
Well, I thought of you as my own son. It was just so natural. I just, you're my baby.
I don't think I would have ever had the words to ask for that level of love, support, and care. But I really did need it in that time of my life. I did it for 6 months, and guess what? I learned all these fundamentals that I would have never learned at CalArts.
Oh, good.
And that made my portfolio that much better, and I applied the second year, and they gave me more money. Never really talked about, like, you know, seeing like my personal work and like what
of
you
course.
Think of it.
I mean, I just think that I'm the underling. I can't critique your professional work. I mean, it's wonderful.
You're my teacher. You'll never stop being my teacher.
No. It is your books are unbelievable, and your animations are unbelievable. To be a part of your education and just be a part of your life has just been so wonderful. And I always think, well, that's my son. I'm so proud of you.
That was animator and illustrator Sanjay Patel speaking with his art teacher from San Bernardino High, Julie Tabler. So, Carla, what struck you about that student-teacher relationship?
You know, it's just they went from drawing with these cheap pastels on cardboard that they pulled out of a dumpster to about 20 years later, a short film by and about Sanjay being nominated for an Oscar. It's quite this arc for Sanjay as an artist. And I'm really struck by how much credit he gives to Julie for that, even after all these years, not just for his success in art, but also for the care packages and the support that she gave him personally, too.
And you've got more of these stories?
I do, but I'm still looking for more. So folks out there, if you're working in a creative job now, I want to know about the teacher who made a difference in your life. Just head over to our website, LAist.com. I will read every single story that comes in through there. And while you're there, you can actually watch this really sweet video we made of Sanjay and Julie reuniting here at KPCC. Though warning, it may make you cry.
That's KPCC's arts education reporter, Carla Javier. Her project is made possible with support from the California Arts Council. Carla, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
And that is The Frame for today. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. We're back here tomorrow.